Hello and welcome to I Don't Get It, the Pop Culture Gatoff Milan Cast. This features the open-minded musings of two late 40s curmudgeons, each staring down the prospect of entertainment irrelevance. I am your co-host, Bill Scurry of American Caesar Enterprises, which is a society for tortured poets.
You know, you said you texted me a few days ago, Bill, like, I'm proud of us that we're not doing another Taylor Swift episode. we're going to do a spinoff show. Where we're going to do a regular show, but we're also going to do another weekly show where we just talk about Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I think
someone could do that.
We need like the Daily Taylor. Like we need to hire another on-air talent who just sort of is like a researcher that is just doing
the hourly Taylor.
Yeah, breaking down the hourly Swift, talking about all the various facets of the Travis Kelce situation,
well,
everything.
I will say this: I can indeed imagine a podcast like ours where two people who are like completely, you know, not typical of the Taylor Swift world, just talk about Taylor Swift every episode. I don't want to do that. I don't want to listen to that, but I can imagine that would be a thing that people would glom onto.
Yeah. Maybe. But again, are you chasing clout by doing that? Is there any...
Yes.
Well, I mean, yes. Okay. We would be chasing clout. I think, but it's like everything that Taylor touches has turned to gold. She's got that Midas, the Midas grasp. And, you know, you sort of figure, what good would it do us? That's why I figured, like, okay, we already talked about Travis Kelce. What was that, like, 6 weeks ago? I think we did the episode.
We've done 3 episodes about Taylor Swift in our history. We just did a general Taylor Swift.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we did the re-releases.
Yeah.
And then we did the Travis Kelce.
Yeah, one was around the large-scale video. Was it Red Taylor's version? That was Red Taylor's
edition, yes.
That's the thing is, it's a lot. It's like Beyonce so far has 2 episodes. Taylor Swift has 3 or 4. So, yes. Yeah, that's what I felt like. Oh, what
and,
the hell?
Adam Levine has 2.
Oh, Jesus, that's right. At least one of them was salacious and soupy. I mean, you know, we can have an opinion on the fucking thing.
But it wasn't. They talked about it being salacious, and it wasn't. It's so tame.
It's
like an idiot's idea of a sexy, rakish guy.
How about this? He's an idiot's idea of a slimy, perp sleaze because it was just text.
Yes.
Nothing actually happened.
Right, exactly.
So
as we determine, his crimes are not even, you know, he's like 1/1000th of a wine.
What is? I listened to a podcast recently where they termed the sort of anti-sex generation as crypto-Victorians, the people who are sort of anti-sex.
I love that.
Yeah, I like it too. There is the very anti-sex thing, which is out there in the world. People like you. You'll see more nudity. You will see no nudity. You will see plenty of violence, and it's like whatever this sort of baffling culture is. We're in the middle of it now.
Yeah, but it goes both ways. Like, you know, to generalize, I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of younger people also are certainly more willing to be less gender conforming.
Yeah. No, that's right. That's a huge improvement.
A lot of people, I mean, I don't know a lot of kids in that realm, but I know a lot of adults in that realm. And again, to generalize, those people are much freer with sexual expression than the average Joe, you know, Midwestern flyover Joe Schmo America.
So who am I talking
anyway,
to here? Who is this?
Who are you talking to? My name is Noah Tarno. I'm the founder. I'm the senior quiz master of the Big Quiz Thing, the trivia game show. Spectacular. And if you've never listened to our show before and now you're like, oh geez, I missed 2 Adam Levine episodes, 2 Beyonce episodes, and 3 Taylor Swift episodes, let us tell you what this is about. I Don't Get It, the Pop Culture Get Off My Long Cast. We're old folks.
It's demonstrably true.
We are less than 2 months from you having a birthday, which means we're less than 3 months from me having
birthday. That's true. It's impending.
Right?
Yeah.
We're in the final quarter. And you know, we look at stuff that's happening. The kids are into, or the cool kids are into, cool people, cool adults are into, and we try to make sense of it. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't. And this episode, this is low hanging fruit, right?
Yeah.
Hot TV show right now.
Yeah.
You know, I remember 10 years ago when Orange is the New Black was a hit, and I asked a trivia question where I referred to it as a TV show, and someone said, it's not a TV show because it's only on Netflix.
Yeah.
But these things are officially classified as TV shows, right?
Yeah, I don't
things
think
that
it's
are only
funny.
Available
I think
on streaming platforms.
When Orange is the New Black hit, what was that, 12, 13? I forget which.
12 or 13.
Yeah, I wonder, I can't remember at that point if you actually could watch Netflix on your set top or if you were just literally stuck on your desktop computer at that point. But yeah.
Plug your phone and computer into my cousin, who's a genius who works for Facebook, I remember his prediction 25 years ago was that the internet will only catch on when you can use it through TV.
Yeah, he's right. He was right. Yeah.
I don't think he was.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. He was incorrect. You're absolutely right.
I like the guy and he's very smart, but he's not right about everything. So yeah, it counts as a TV show. It's available on Amazon. Is it still Amazon Prime or is it
no,
just Amazon?
No, it actually changed its name to an Italian name. It's called Amazon Prime, I believe, is what it's spelled now. If you
but seriously, because I go to Prime Video and it says go here now every time.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
But it's still called Prime.
Oh, Amazon Prime Video, I believe, is how I've seen it.
Amazon Prime Video.
But it's like again, what do you want us to call it?
What a
difference. As opposed to what are we going to call it? You call it whatever you want because I understand. Call it fuckface.
I'm going to call it PBS. How about that? Okay, Channel 13.
Yeah. Call it the Bloodhound Gang. Anything you want.
Wow. Remember that? 3-2-1 Contact. That was an interesting show. Anyway, so this show is on Amazon Prime. The first season of 8 episodes dropped, as the kids say, 25 years ago. 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago?
Something thereabouts. Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks back. Yeah.
It's already been renewed for a second season. It's adapted from a video game series. I hear you kids love these video games. And it's called, it has no connection to the Police song. It's called Fallout. Bill, give us the 311 on Fallout.
You know, by the way, the Dutch emergency code is 112. I've sort of been arguing with myself. It's like, what is a better 911 or 112? Like, what are you more likely to remember? Especially if you're toggling between countries, it means that you would have to sort of look to see what is, like, if you were in Manila, what is the local emergency thing? You'd actually have to think about that. It behooves you to just keep that in mind.
We should have had an international treaty to determine what the emergency code would be worldwide.
This is so hard.
UN has failed, my friend.
What if you...
No wonder we need to pull out of NATO.
What if you skin your knee in Tuvalu? How are you going to call an ambulance? If you're there picking at your phone trying to figure out what the fuck three-digit code is, you know?
Do they have phones in Tuvalu?
I don't know. It's a coconut that
you
put in
here. Do they have knees in Tuvalu?
Do they have... No, that's the truth. They don't have knees. All right, yes. So,
do they have skin?
So okay. Fallout is a post-apocalyptic drama television series created by two people named Graham Wagner and Geneva Robinson-Dworet for the aforementioned Amazon Prime series, as Noah said. It is based on the video RPG, the Bethesda Games branded gaming franchise, which I did not know stretches from 1997 to present. That is a long footprint that this thing's had on the ground in one form or another between many different platforms. I had no idea. The game itself was created by...
I actually think it's older than that. I think it's 1995.
1995, oh, okay.
Well, keep talking, I'll look
it up. Don't worry about it, no one cares. It was
who cares? Does it matter now?
The game was created by Tim Kaine and Leonard Boyarsky, and I wonder if they're going to get if they've got points on the back end or if they have ownership stakes. Who knows? I mean, it's really not important, but you know, you figure these things just use people's ideas and churn them out. So this,
I stand corrected. 1996.
The series stars actors Ella Purnell, who is an English person who was in a couple of Tim Burton movies. Not really familiar with her oeuvre, but she's got a I think she's late 20s, and she's done a.
She was in Yellow Jacket.
Okay, Yellow Jacket. Another thing. Yeah. Another almost thing that we did. It's on the sort of standing engagement topics. Some guy named Aaron Moten is in there. Kyle MacLachlan, of course, genre hero. You know well from Twin Peaks and Dune and all this stuff. He's been around for a long time. He's a veteran now.
And Sex and the City.
Sex and the City, among others, yeah. And Walton Goggins, my main man, Walton Goggins, who is he's one of our sort of preeminent entertainers. He tap dances between streaming, television, movies. He does it all. Tarantino, Justified. He's a man that wears a lot of hats. And he actually wears a pretty impressive hat in this show, no less. So Amazon purchased the rights to produce a live-action project based on this in 2020. Series was announced that July, so it's sort of, you know, it's been boiling for a little while now, with Jonathan Nolan, who's one half of the Nolan siblings, responsible for such movies as Batman's Begins.
He's Christopher Nolan's brother?
Yeah, he
Oh, I didn't pick up on
they that. Worked on movies together, and it's I think that they divorced their partnership. Not amicably. I think they just decided they have two different careers. They're essentially
so big rift in their family now. Thanksgiving is really tough.
You might think of this. Yeah, Nolan. Nolan was the guy, Jonathan Nolan, or Jonah, as his friends call him, because I actually worked with a guy who went to Georgetown with. So he called him Jonah because they were like bunk mates.
Really? So, oh, you're serious?
That's yeah. No, it's true. I know I usually do that, but. Yeah, Jonathan Nolan and his wife, Lisa Joy, who have been a partnership for good years. They have something called Kilter Films, and they produced, among other things, Westworld, which is on HBO, was on HBO. I think it was 3 seasons. And Person of Interest, which was like $10 billion seasons on CBS. It's stuff your grandmother loves to watch. That was Michael Emerson and Jim Caviezel, if you're paying attention. And Michael Emerson's actually in this too, so there's some footprints of that coming around. They produced it. Nolan himself directed the first three episodes of 8. The show premiered on April 10. Generally received positive reviews in the main. It was recently renewed for the second season. As Noah says, the sort of low-hanging fruit. It has been out for a while, but there's a cause to talk about it because it has been...
A while, 11 days.
It broke its silence after 11 days.
It broke its silence after 12 hours.
So textually, what we're talking about, the series depicts the aftermath of the Great War of 2077. This is the basis of the video game. I'm sure it's been carried over. Again, neither of us played the video game. We're just basing this on what we watched of the TV show. So after the Great War of 2077, it was an apocalyptic nuclear exchange and an alternate history of Earth, where advances in nuclear technology after World War II led to the emergence of a retro-futuristic society and a subsequent resource war. So to boil that down, what it actually means is that this series pretty much looks like a hybrid of Atomic Age Americana crossed with Mad Max. It's a very strange palette, but I once you sort of look at it and you squint, you're like, okay, I see what they're doing here. A little bit of Fury Road, a little bit of,
That's good. That's a good description.
Yeah.
That's
a good description. So many survivors took refuge in deep underground fallout bunkers, which are called vaults in the glossary of the show. And the people inside the vaults are kind of unaware that each vault was designed to perform psychological experiments on the vault dwellers. It's not just a dwelling. It's essentially a gigantic ongoing experiment. So more than 200 years after the initial devastation, after generations and generations of people living underground, a young woman named Lucy, played by the aforementioned Parnell, has to leave her home in vault number 33. So you assume that there's a whole series of vaults all over America. She ventures out into the unforgiving, dangerous wasteland of devastated Los Angeles to look for her kidnapped father, who was essentially like the ombudsman or the mayor of the particular vault. So along the way, she meets a martial cult. This gets weird. This gets weird quickly. It's like a martial cult called the Brotherhood of Steel, quasi...
Martial meaning like military.
Yeah, yeah. M-A-R-T-I-A-L. Yeah.
Okay. I thought you said Martian for a minute.
No. Martial.
People from Mars.
And they sort of have like Knights Templar type...
Military cult would have been clearer, but...
Okay, yeah.
You do you.
So, and they have the particular... She meets this sort of Iron Man type warrior, a young guy named Maximus. So he wears this, highly... hyped up, linebacker suit of armor. It's almost like a walking, the thing that Sigourney Weaver was in Aliens, except it's sort of like covered all over. I guess that
I think Iron Man, the first Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
Like big, in the first Iron Man movie.
Yeah, big bulky. So you wonder, how does this work? But whatever.
Pacific Rim, but like exactly. More closer to human size kind of.
Yeah. And so there's also a deformed ghoul bounty hunter guy by the name of Cooper Howard, who's called the ghoul actually, is with a capital G. It's both a class of creature and is also this guy's sort of sobriquet. And he's played by Goggins under a lot of makeup, and his nose has been squished out.
He has no nose, yes.
Yeah, it's just like a Skeletor essentially. It's like a hole where it would be. So
he's wearing the strap thing with the frills.
Yeah. So true to all things in our televisual landscape, the narrative consists of gory, soupy, violence, a lot of cartoon squibs. It's obviously like CGI blood captures, and when you see people get like gashed with a knife, you're not looking at makeup, you're looking at post effects. I don't know, maybe it takes you out of it, maybe it doesn't. So it's also
way to ruin the magic, Bill.
It's also got mystery box plotting, and the thing is, if you know the Nolans, especially Jonathan Nolan, and like that was a big thing in Westworld. It was a lot of promises that barely paid off, but they just essentially thought that Westworld, the show about walking around robots, needed a different layer of existential, of season-long mysteries. And I'm not really sure it added anything. You also got expansive, vast CGI tableaus, intertwining soapy narratives, definitely soapy, which cross-cut between the people who stayed in the vault, the people who are on the characters, cross-cutting between, I think it's like three or four running stories as people sort of like you're going between, who's walking where and, where are they in relation to one another. I watched 4 of 8. 8 was only available. Noah, I believe, watched 2 of 8.
I watched 2. I intended to watch more.
Yeah, I reassured him. I said, I think you can get the gist. Having seen 4, I think you can get the gist of 2 gives you an idea of what you're looking at and where you're set. It doesn't seem to do much more over 4 that it didn't already do in 2. So tell me, Noah, is this what you expected? How'd you vibe with this thing?
I mean, I didn't expect anything really. I knew next to nothing about it. As you said, neither of us has played the game. I think the show's very well done. It's stuffed full of imaginative ideas. It is very pretty, beautifully shot / CGI'd. I think Walton Goggins is very good. I remember him from The Hateful Eight.
Yeah.
Which
Chris Mannix, he was great. He just
Very creepy and devilish in that, and thought he did a good job. And he's like a Willem Dafoe type. Like, he's kind of freaky looking, and Steve Buscemi, he uses that to his advantage when he plays frightening characters. I think the gore, I mean, you seem to be pissing on the gore. Oh, it's all fake. But I thought it was well done. It's visceral, it's cool, it's without, you know, you're able to give it a sly smile without feeling it hits too close to home. There's a great use of, you know, so when it's a little confusing at first, but when the nuclear bomb hits, I guess it's 2077, but culture hasn't advanced beyond the 1950s. So it's retrofuturistic. You see these really futuristic looking towers and robots, but people are still dressed like in the 1950s and watching little chintzy little black and white TVs, right? So it's using old classic music throughout. We'll Meet Again, the song at the end of Dr. Strangelove. Bing Crosby's version of Don't Fence Me In. By the way, I've noticed something. I would not say I'm a Bing Crosby fan, but his voice is so distinctive and has such a perfect vibe that really works.
It was the sound of American, him and Sinatra were the voices. Right. That was the sound of
but
American
just
pop
the calming,
culture.
But way more than Sinatra, I think. It just always sounds, it's just really, you feel something when you hear it, and it takes you to a time and a place and a feeling, and it's just great use of these songs here. The show really has an endearing sense of fun, but I don't think the show's as clever as it thinks it is. Look, I haven't watched the video. I haven't played the video game. I read many things that said, you don't have to play the video game to understand it. And I think that's true. And maybe I just need to give it a few more episodes, but I don't think it does a good job of explaining its world. Right. I was very confused at first to see the 1950s world with the robots. And then like, well, what's going on in the world? And then we get to the future and I'm picking apart the logic. Well, it's 200 years later, but the English language hasn't changed at all. But then I'm like, well, then a zombie shows up, the ghoul. So I'm like, all right, I shouldn't have been picking it apart because this is a world of zombies. Like, I just feel like I'm having trouble getting my footing. You know, when I watch post-apocalyptic things, I discovered something about myself, and I'll get more to this in a minute. When it comes to sci-fi, like, I guess I want more hard sci-fi. Like, I want a world where the rules are in place and they apply. So when I get to post-apocalyptic stuff, I'm always like, well, how did we get here? Right? I just saw Civil War last night. And that was one of my problems with it, is like, I don't think they explain enough how we got here. So I find myself trying to figure that out, and I'm getting myself tripped up by that. I also think all the reviews I've read have said the show has a commentary about haves and have-nots, and I think it's a very ham-handed ham-handed is wrong because it's fine, but it's not deep at all. You know, Lucy gets to the surface from the vault, and she meets all the, you know, the weirdos up there, and this one woman says, well, you got 10 fingers and clean teeth. That must be nice. Like, it's not really a deep comment about haves and have-nots. It's pretty obvious. I will also say I thought Walton Goggins is very good. I think the other two lead actors, you got Ella Purnell, who's the brunette Emma Stone, and you got Aaron Moten, who's the young, less cute Denzel Washington. I am not impressed with either of them. I think they're both subpar actors and really annoying.
Or they're being directed to do, yeah, it's possible.
Fine,
yeah.
Yes, great. Maybe they're, you know, as good as, you know, Laurence Olivier, but they're not given great performances, and I find their characters annoying. So if they're going to be, you know, if they're the audience surrogate, I'm going to have trouble making through 8 episodes. Yes, I probably need to give it more time to let the strands cohere into a solid narrative, but I'm not there yet. And, you know, I want to go further. And, you know, as I say, maybe it's also just, this is the type of sci-fi that, you know, I'm reminded of the 2 episodes I watched of Westworld. I didn't like that at all. There's a milieu here. There's a style. There's an aesthetic that just doesn't get to me. So, you know, well done, not for me.
Yeah, I thought I liked this a lot more than I did. And it's just, I bet you the commingling of all these disparate elements of pop culture ephemera, my guess is they work a lot better if you got a PlayStation controller in your hands. I think that honestly, you probably.
But apparently, this there's not a lot of narrative in the video game. Like this really, it takes a very formless narrative and makes a narrative out of it, yeah, which is why a lot of people familiar with the source material are really praising.
And it should be stated that this is not an adaptation. This is a story told within the auspices of the game. These are not characters that appeared in the game. This is essentially spun out of bits and pieces. Like, it's all represented here, but this is not the game you play when you play Fallout, from what I understand. But the thing is, it's everything you're describing, it just feels like a bunch of disparate junk pieces held together with Frankenstein sutures. And, you know, I don't think it adheres. I don't think the stuff sticks together. And, you know, executionally, the pilot relied way too much on slow-mo massacres that were ironically scored to that throwback. By the way, what would you call that music? Is it Americana? Mid-century songbook? I don't even know what you call that.
Yeah, mid-century pop music.
You know,
there are people who... Back in my music journalism days, I'm sure I'd have a better answer. But I'd say mid-century American
pop. It is, you know, like Hank Williams, Bing, Nat King Cole type stuff. It's very, you know, pre-rock and roll.
Hank Williams was country.
Right. But, you know. No, it's just the mixture of sort of, it's not quite folky, it's not quite big band, but it's
it's pop. I mean, it's what was pop music at the time.
Yeah.
Popular music. They didn't really call it pop music. They probably just called it popular music.
I mean, the show has a score to it, but it keeps returning to these needle drops along the way. And so it's like, you know.
No, but I'm praising those. I thought those were very well done.
Yeah, they didn't do much. It just felt like it over-relies on those a little bit. Way. It's just that the difference between what Nolan did on Westworld and like the setting up this thing here too, which I felt like, all right, I get what you're doing here, but it's a little heavy-handed. You know, the thing is, I will agree with you. These are actors. I think. I mean, I like these actors. McLaughlin plays McLaughlin has played a very sort of like on Portlandia. He played the mayor of Portlandia. He was this sort of optimist, this pangloss optimist, and he does very. You know, like obviously he came up playing Dale Cooper, the sort of boy detective genius in Twin Peaks, and he played Paul Atreides and. I mean, he doesn't have a huge role in this, but I think that as the guy who's, you know, embodying that sort of 50s chirp, he's very good casting for that kind of thing. You know, the same thing. Ella Parnell, I could say she's not being asked to do more than one level, I think, is what I'm reading. These actors are really giving you one layer of...
Don't you think she's doing an Emma Stone impersonation?
I didn't get that, but you know...
Oh, my God. I just feel like you put a red wig on her. It's Emma Stone. It's just...
Yeah.
No. Well, annoying Emma Stone.
Yeah, maybe so. You know, Goggins, I will agree with you. Goggins was the reason I sprinted through four episodes thinking it's like, if Goggins is going to hold this together for me, please give me that. I want him essentially as
I want you.
And but
you sound good.
The thing is that the patchwork wasteland was too full of, you know, like video game cliches that it's like this is a set that doesn't translate to TV format. And I might have had the same problem with Last of Us a little bit, even though Last of Us, its best episodes were the ones that veered from the format, but then some of it kind of stuck. All of a sudden, like a monster goblin would come out in Last of Us, the TV show, and it's like, well, this is I turned on to see the two gay guys live a whole life. You know, it's like, I don't need all those fucking mushroom people coming out of a hole in the ground in episode 7 or 8 or whatever it was. You know, it's like, there's a scene in, I think it's episode 4, which is essentially a boss battle with a huge, gigantic, nuclear-rated axolotl salamander. There's a, you know, pink sea serpent. And it's just like, this just is DOA to me. Like, I don't want a boss battle. I don't need this. Like, that is such a video game conceit that I just don't think thrives.
Wait a minute. But isn't the boss battle, like, if this weren't adapted from a video game, would you even have read it as a boss battle?
Well, I mean, a level boss, you know what I'm saying? Not the ultimate boss.
I mean, is in freaking Empire, Return of the Jedi, when he fights the thing under Jabba the Hutt's palace, is that a boss battle?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The boss battles, it's not the end game boss. It's essentially, right. you clear your level by fighting the level of the boss.
Well, but
the
there
level.
Are bosses and there's the big boss,
yeah, right?
Right.
So I'm saying the lizard monster that shows up.
We're in the weeds here.
Crumbled this morning in Anchorage, Alaska. The specter of nuclear war facing this nation for 10 long years is final.
The show's a hit, apparently. It's gotten really good. There was a review in The Guardian where this woman went freaking nuts over it. So people really seem to love it. The people love it.
They seem to love it.
Where can we go from here? And it's where we can go is it's already been renewed for a second season. So, you know, it's definitely winning people over. Why is it a winner in the public consciousness, apparently?
Well, this is definitely broad-scale sci-fi. decades of pre-awareness, if you want to use the jargon that fucking, you know, the studio heads will get into bed with something if they think that everybody can already identify what it is, which is why Mario Brothers was the big hit last year. Last of Us, which was executed very well. Last of Us had a gigantic video game franchise that already made billions of dollars to stand up for it. And the same thing with Fallout's been out since we freaking graduated from college. So it's like, this has been out in the world and out either for a long time. Now, of course, you gotta deliver, and it seems like they did that. So, you know, they dropped, it's a massive investment of capital that Amazon, which has all this money that they just burn through, they pitchfork through haystacks of money, just throwing it at things like Lord of the Rings, which they made a really terrible series out of, but they spent billions on that series. And you sort of want to, does Amazon have quality control? Because on one hand, they make really good things. On the other hand, they make a lot of junk. And it's like this, it's so schizophrenic in terms of who's doing quality control here. You know, so this gets the money. Somebody that I would be interested in, I'd rather watch John Sayles movies, but Amazon's not going to give the money to John Sayles or some sort of similar human interest storyteller. But this is sort of depressing, violent streaming content, which is, I have a feeling that as soon as it goes away, though, I think you're going to forget about it. I think that this won't be talked about. It won't be necessarily a sensation. People will watch it when it comes back, but I just don't know if it's got to stick. It's going to stick to the wall like maybe other things did. You know, there's some other TV shows that get a little more. I guess sticky is the term I'm using. I don't think this is going to do it, but that doesn't seem to be stopping anybody's excitement for right now. And you know, it's got these great actors that people know. Kyle MacLachlan, Goggins is really having a moment. He's in a very identifiable villain. He's essentially the collateral for this is either the Iron Man armor head or the cowboy ghoul gunslinger. Like that's the picture of it. And it's like, that's what they're selling. And you get that, you know, that's on the tin.
It's very video game looking.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And I, you know, when I saw the Iron Man heads, you know, the sort of mechanized men, I thought, I don't know what that is, but it looks like knockoff stuff. And it's like, and true to form, that's my least favorite stuff in the show, ironically, is the gigantic Iron Man guy. I just feel like it's not saying anything new about it. However, you know, it just the budgets are high. It's a massive, you know, like Nolan and his wife and the rest of these people who are producing it are filling, they're putting the dollars on the screen. So it looks like you're getting your money's worth. It looks exciting. It is the sort of thing you're sort of compelled to watch.
You know, I agree with you. I do feel like this is going to fade away from consciousness quickly. But for me, it's because, as I said before, I just think at least two of the three lead characters are not compelling at all. And they're the, you know, the ghoul, I don't think maybe the plot will shift, is not supposed to be the audience surrogate. But Aaron Moten and Ella Purnell are, and I just find those characters so wimpy and unappealing. Then again, I don't know. I'm going to give it at least one more episode. Maybe I'll change my mind. The big thing, the IP, pre-awareness, whatever you want to call it. There was an interesting article in Slate.com last week that said, and it was about Fallout, and it said, you know, I think there's this consensus that superhero movies are, you know, lying, you know, on the downslope now. I mean, maybe they'll come back. You know, everything's last few big movies have disappointed, and so maybe their time has passed and now they're going to be replaced with they specifically said post-apocalyptic video games, but they're more saying like video game movies for adults. You know, yes, we had Sonic and we had Super Mario and whatever, but like adult video games, e.g. Fallout, The Last of Us. So, you know, milk the IP for all it's worth. I mean, there's the obvious reason that despite my criticisms, I do think this show is well-made and imaginative and gives people what they want. And again, I thought you criticized those slow-mo, incredibly violent action scenes, but I thought that scene was pretty good. I mean, that kind of violence isn't usually my cup of tea, but, you know, I thought for what it was well done, and I get the appeal of it. I also think, look, you know, I mean, arguably for 20 years now or something, but stories about apocalypse are big, man. They touch something within us, right? Perhaps more now than ever. So I think apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic, pre-apocalyptic, mid-apocalyptic, you know, sub-apocalyptic, all the stuff.
Peri-apocalyptic.
Peri-apocalyptic, penulti-apocalyptic.
My name is Lucy McLean, and I'm an active contributor to the well-being of my community. Repair skills. I enjoy participating in the Young Pipers Association, which keeps me active. Science skills. Obviously, mine are nothing compared to my dad's, but I always relish a challenge.
No, would you have liked this as a kid?
I think there's a good chance I would have because I've always, like I said, I like some sci-fi. I like some apocalyptic stories. And, you know, if I were a generation or even half a generation younger, I think I'd be much more into video games. So this IP would have more purchase with me, right? So I think there's a good chance I'd like it more than I do. I mean, you know, I like it. I don't really like it, but I like it. So I think there's a chance it would really speak to me on a deeper or more passionate level than the it does now. So yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I most likely. Yeah, I mean, it goes back to a lot of the stuff that we, if we're talking about a Guardians of the Galaxy or some other fantastic thing, you know, Last of Us, you know, whatever the sort of genre things that we've talked about for a while that is fantastic and sci-fi and or superhero-y. You know, we just didn't get as nearly as much of the stuff in the 80s and 90s as we would like. We read comics, and comic books and cartoons were where it filled the, you know, like it both filled the niche we had for it. And it also made us want to see this sort of storytelling in, you know, TV and movie. We didn't get it in TVs and movies. It was very sparing at the time. So, you know, we took the Crow movies, which I don't know if those are great, but they were, you know, we watched them because that was what you had. Dark City, which was a good movie, but I'm saying it's like there wasn't nearly as much. And so I kind of was unquestioningly ate a lot of this stuff as media. You know, I think my complaints aren't necessarily about the execution of the art that this is doing. You know, I think it's more, my complaints are more formal, I think. I'm trying to like structure my thoughts a little bit.
Right.
It's the stuff that I don't get how the stuff inside of it works, but apparently it works just fine in a video game and it's been there for a while. You know, I don't think I could have elaborated that complaint when I was younger. I don't think I would have had it, actually. I maybe just would have like swept right by if I'm just not a very seasoned or experienced moviegoer or media goer. I mean, Christ, I watched the Dolph Lundgren Master of the Universe movie, and I loved it when in 87.
You did?
It's not a terrible movie. I mean, it's not a good movie, but it's like I fucking watched it, and I watched it on VHS when it came out just because it's like, all right, man, I had those figures in 83. Because
it's on TV.
Because it's on TV. I had those figures in 83, 84, and I watched the cartoon, and then I watched the movie, and it's just like, here's some more garbage for you to eat.
The ability to defend yourself is but one part of your training. We are the finders and the preservers.
A question we ask every episode, but here it might be folding in on itself. Is the television, you know, arguably television, Amazon Prime series Fallout in any way a sign of the apocalypse?
Well, again, you're referring to it, but it's like, is it something in the air right now that we are circling apocalypse textually? Like actually the content itself is, you know, there's a lot of apocalypse in the air, to put it. I mean, between talking about the eclipse the other day and this, and, you know, like, and a lot of storytelling is going the sort of Mad Max route. You know, it remains to be seen if we, you know, there's a Fury Road 2 or the prequels coming out later in the year.
Furiosa Fury. I saw that as a preview.
And the trailer looks great. I mean, it's like if he's able to do again what he did with Furiosa, that may wind up be another sensation that we wind up talking about. I mean, the first one, I think, came out in 17. Yeah, I think 2017 or so.
I thought it was before
16,
that.
16, either 15. Way. But yeah, maybe. But it's like that there is something right now going on where, you know. But no, I mean, look, it may be talking about the apocalypse, but no, this is... It's actually high quality stuff. I mean, it's not like the quality, the QA of this is being let down on the job. It seems people actually like this. It seems it's being, you know, acting aside, you know, I'm not going to argue with that with you. But, you know, like this is proven creators with large budgets. And it's like they're spending the money well. Amazon's finally getting its ROI on this. It's like, look, I wish there were, I said John Sayles before. I wish there was room in the middle of all this for guys like Sayles in the marketplace, sort of doing, you know, human interest stuff that I want to see alongside behemoths like this. Could be on streaming, could be in movies, whatever, man. It's like John Sayles movie would be the craft services budget. And the transpo budget of this entire show, you could make 6 John Sayles movies starring you know, Walton Goggins. It'd be great. I'd love to see a John Sayles movie with Walton Goggins. That'd be,
starring Walton
oh Goggins. Oh my God, that'd be insane.
For the budget of the 1/6 the craft services on right. Fallout.
But this, you know.
Let's crunch those numbers and get to work.
Look, the success of this is double tapping the idea that grim and violent sci-fi video games, to your point, are the next fertile ground for streaming series. And it's about the apocalypse, but I don't see it as being the apocalypse.
Right. No, it's too good to be sign of the apocalypse in that way. But yes, the way I think it might be a sign of apocalypse has to do with this idea if, you know, big, violent, adult-centered video games become the new, you know, primary fodder for movies. And I read an interesting quote. There was a review of this in PC Gamer. I mean, I don't know what that's worth. But they brought up something interesting that, look, if we're getting to one of the problems we had in the last 20 years or so, and not just the superhero movies, I mean, some of this is driven by social media, is just the obnoxious, obnoxious gatekeeping. And I can't believe I'm going to quote Zack Snyder, who, you know, for all his dumbitude, he said something when I wangled my way into an advanced screening of scenes from the Watchmen movie, and Zack Snyder was there and Gabe Gibbons were there. What were there? Was there? And Snyder said something really interesting, because someone asked, like, how do you, you know, the people are like, oh, it's not faithful enough to the comic book. He's like, well, why does that matter? And he said, you know, no one's complaining that the movie of No Country for Old Men isn't that faithful to Cormac McCarthy's book. Like, why this gatekeeping? So we've seen that accelerate with superhero movies. Like, if something's not faithful enough, the nerds and the internet go nuts, and it just adds to the toxicity in social media and spilling out into the world. Well, I'm afraid that if we move from superheroes to video games, that shit maybe won't get worse, but will stay terrible, right? That there's going to be more nerds being upset and poisoning the world and death threats and ridiculous garbage.
Remember, like today's that. Video game gatekeepers were yesterday's Star Trek gatekeepers, so they've always been there.
Yeah, but the Star Trek gatekeepers didn't have much power.
That's true.
Because the nerds hadn't taken over mainstream entertainment and the internet didn't exist. So, I mean, you know, remember Gamergate, like these video game losers losing their mind because someone with a vagina had an opinion on a video game, right? So what happens when, God forbid, right? A big budget Hollywood movie or TV series about a beloved video game directed by a woman, and it veers from the source material by, you know, 0.3%, you know, someone's going to bomb her house or something. Like, I don't mean to sound overdramatic, but, you know, I feel like we might be on the road to that. And that's certainly a piece of the apocalypse.
Well. Why, is this an Amish production of The Count of Monte Cristo? Just the weirdest circle jerk I've ever been invited to.
All right, Noah, we're veering to the end of our show like a drunk driver towards jealousy. Do you have any opinions that might, you know, be equating with jealousy or envy in this matter?
As much as they, you know, most of them haven't scratched the itch the way I dreamed of when I was a kid, like, I like that we're living in the age of superhero movies, because that was really our dream as a kid, right? I mean, you remember just, oh my God, the idea of a non-comedy Batman movie, and like, how do we get people to take this shit seriously? And comics are not just for kids, and oh my God, if you had told us when we were kids the bounty of superhero material now, how the most, you know, some of the most extreme DC and Marvel characters have had live action adaptations, it would blow our freaking minds. So, you know, I feel like that's something good about our world now that we live in that world, and I feel a little vindicated. So there's definitely a get off my lawn sense of like, we're moving on from that into a world that I don't know about. Right. I had never heard of the Fallout video. I mean, I'd heard of it, but like,
it wasn't a concrete idea. Yeah, me too. It wasn't a concrete idea.
Last of Us, all these things. I don't play video games. So I'm in Tetris. So I don't know. And it's definitely another sense of the world passing me by. Right. Because, you know, if I were young now, I'd have more familiarity with the shit, and I don't. So, you know, it definitely, I'm jealous of the world continuing to pass me by.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I missed the boat on playing Fallout. I didn't really have a concrete idea what it was. I saw it in Collateral. I saw it on the shelves in, I forget the game stores in New York. GameSpot or GameStop. You know,
GameStonk.
These were on shelves for decades, you know, going back to PlayStation 1 and stuff like that. It never got me. And so, you know, I didn't know. It's like, oh boy, this is something I could actually enjoy. Sometimes there is, you know, not the Gamergate people, but there is a hardcore gamer people who are now taking in gaming as one of their primary media sources rather than like me, where I maybe play.
That's how they get their news, through gaming.
You have to put it somewhere in the background. But it's
really sad.
I play maybe like two or three games a year tops, and it's only a couple of weeks. I keep a console around, but I mean, it's the enjoyment I get, the vicarious thrill of seeing other people enjoy games so much, and it's like, oh, but I don't want to play that game, but I like the level of excitement. I don't really touch it a whole lot. I don't really touch the excitement of gaming as much as I wish I could. And this is one of those games that I think visited a lot of happiness to a lot of gamers. But I don't want to play Fallout. I never did. This is all a little bit to the left of the topic because we're discussing the game. But it makes me feel like, oh, perhaps I would have enjoyed the TV show Fallout more if I had already been on board with it, if I'd played 2 or 3, or if I was waiting for the release of Fallout 5 or 7 or whatever the fuck they're on, you know, that would have, I would have felt like part of the team, but I don't. It doesn't matter. All right, so charging headlong, Noah, into failure. What about the Felonian scale, the XYZ axis of what we have? Where does this rank?
Right. Well, the obvious starting point is The Last of Us. I like The Last of Us a lot more than this for a lot of reasons. It was easier to grasp the world. The acting performances were better. The tone just accorded more with my interests. You know, it's type of sci-fi, a little more horror than sci-fi, I guess. So you take The Last of Us, you multiply it by something that's got a kind of the skewed view of things the way Fallout does, at least it's compared with Last of Us. And that would be Skibidi Toilet. So you have The Last of Us times Skibidi Toilet. Now you're way, way higher than Fallout needs to be, right? So you divide it by Fortnite, you know, a video game, and frankly, I feel like visually it has a lot in common. So The Last of Us times Skibidi Toilet divided by Fortnite plus 4.183.
You sure about that last number? You had it down to the...
It might be 187. It's either 187 or 183. I have to whip out my protractor and triple check.
I feel like no matter how good this is, I mean, I do think it's a thing of quality. I didn't vibe with it, but it is a thing of quality. We could, it's like, if you take this as a recommendation, that's fine. I think that's cool. I don't think that the level of quality necessarily, what it brings is all that unique on our scale. I think we've talked about a lot of commensurate comps that are sort of equal to the amount of enthusiasm of something I would say is a good product, but I didn't necessarily vibe with it. You can throw a, here's a reference from inside the show. You can throw a disembodied Michael Emerson head at the ranks of our show and find a good comp among all the billions of things. Noah, as we've discussed, almost across 300 episodes as we rapidly charge in a few weeks, 3 episodes. So I'm going to cut to the chase here. I think, how about I pull out of the ether, out of the muck, out of the pickle jar? What about Gerard Carmichael? You know, something that was, a decent entertainer, somebody who we put it around the drop of Rothaniel. He's got a show on stream. He's streaming series on Netflix right now, which is kind of weirdly received. And it's just like, okay, he does his job confidently. It's not for me. It's not my particular form of comedy, but I can see what he does well. I don't think I'd be dipping into it again afterwards. But, you know, it's like if you buy into it, you most likely will find something you want. And, you know, it just didn't excite me. So that's where it reminded me of something along that kind of like loose.
Jared Carmichael.
Yeah.
Get ready. Season 2. Jared Carmichael is going to have a guest spot on.
Hey, Gerard Carmichael was in Poor Things. He had a pretty substantial role.
Really?
Yeah. It's
I didn't see that.
He did not act very well in it. Unfortunately, he's kind of a stiff actor. He doesn't really give you a good performance. But hey, man, you know.
Well, then screw that guy. All right. So, Bill. Wrap us up here, my friend.
I'm going to do exactly that. You can find a fine past episode to the show. It's on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play. Tweet to us at Noah and Bill Show. Write to us, noahandbilldontgetit@gmail.com. Give us that review, the sweet, sweet bone marrow reviews. We just love to taste it. Slum, slurp, 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 yum. I am at William Scurry on all the things that you could possibly want to find somebody. If you're looking for me, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Insta. I'm on Facebook. Insta. I'm on Blue Rumble, I'm on Gab, I'm on all the right-wing things, whatever you guys want, I'm on all the
Jesus, man.
Look on youtube.com/AMCaesar for video stuff that I've done, just every now and then, little goofy make-ups I put up there. And yeah, here's Noah, he's going to tell you about where you can find him.
You can find me at bigquizthing.com, The Big Quiz Thing, America's finest providers of live trivia events for corporate and private parties, team building, corporate events, conferences, weddings, bar, bat mitzvahs, birthday parties, you name it. 22 years of excellence. What can I tell you, man? Some fun stuff coming up. I'm hoping to, man, I haven't been to Vegas. I used to go to Vegas like 2-3 times a year for events. I haven't been since pre-pandemic.
I didn't realize you were that was your clip, was 2-3 times a year.
Maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe it was 2 times
a year. I've only been there, I think, 4 times myself.
No, I've been there a bunch of times. I don't like it, but I've been there.
I like it a lot.
No, I like going for business. It's a kick for business. So you just never go outside. So, I'm closing the gig there. So wish me luck. Anyway, learn more at bigquizthing.com. Learn all about how we can make your trivia dreams come true. And I'm on Instagram at TheNolatano sometimes.
All right, everybody. Until our next episode, when we somehow talk about Taylor Swift, of all people, removing her nose, becoming an irradiated, gunslinging zombie, and shambles across the landscape in a mechanized battlesuit.
We don't get it.
An American Caesar Enterprises production, 2024.